He's Mark Potash. I'm Patrick Finley. Welcome to Hallis Intrigue. Potsy coming up on the show. We will talk about Caleb Williams breaking for the summer and what he plans to do. We'll talk about Roma Dunze and everything else the Bears have to look forward to between now and the start of training camp on July 19th. All that and more coming up on Hallis Intrigue. Potsy, the Bears breaking for summer. Caleb Williams is still going to be working on football. Doesn't sound like he's the kind of guy who goes and lays on a deserted island for a month. It's probably a good thing, given all that he's got to learn.
Yeah, I think he sounds like he really knows he still has things to work on. And I think he's going to actually work on things that will... I think he'll be more interested in football than his brand, which is kind of funny. Not something we would have said like 3 months ago or 4 months ago. But he seems like he's... really into this, I guess, and into the whole and all in, I guess. And I think that's probably a good thing because we really don't know. I don't know exactly what to expect based on what we've seen in the offseason from him. But I think the general signs have been pretty good. And his regimen in this interim period before training camp, I think is also pretty good.
Yeah, he and Keenan Allen had talked, I think, since around the draft about getting together and going somewhere to throw and to hang out, and even to maybe invite some defensive players, presumably so they can scream at each other from across the line of scrimmage. It'll be California or Florida, seems like. Sounds like they got a overseas or a foreign trip probably shot down. But a little bit of getting to know your time is probably a good thing too, because, I mean, Caleb's had that here. And he certainly got to know the rookies, but it couldn't help to spend some time with veterans like Keenan Allen, who really wasn't here for a lot of the offseason program.
Yeah, it's really hard to tell. I'll be honest. I think what people want to know is, like, where are they? Where is this? You know, what are the indications that this offense is going to be good? This team is going to be good? And I'll be honest, we really don't know until we see, like, guys like Keenan Allen, like the offensive line, in pads, hitting. I mean, there's so much to know. So I guess we're kind of where we were with just a lot of optimism about what can happen, and things kind of just trending in the right direction. And I don't know, as I always said this many times, as a longtime cynic for obvious reasons, I just feel more positive about what can happen instead of worrying about what might not happen. So I guess what I'm saying is I can't wait for the start of training camp, which is, you know, at my advanced age, I feel pretty good about that.
Mark, what happens to you the morning of every first day of training camp?
I wake up at 3:30 in the morning and without an alarm, because there's that excitement. I made a little bit of it, but it's very true. It's very organic, and it's very absolutely true. There's a certain excitement about training camp and the start of even seasons that we didn't expect it to, there weren't near the expectations of this one, where, man, I'm just so keyed up that I wake up and I take a picture of my alarm clock and I'll tweet it out. It's kind of, like I said, it's a little bit of a bit, but it's very organic. And I guess the reason why it's a good point now is that, I'm looking forward to training camp. I'm looking, you know, if they started tomorrow, I would not be, I wouldn't be upset about that. I've had a pretty good, frankly, for myself, I've had a pretty easy off season, as opposed to usually when I'm covering the Cubs and Sox or Bulls or Hawks, whatever. And I'm ready to go. And I think a lot of that is the excitement that, hey, this has a chance to not only be a good team, but to give us a sustained success or competitiveness that the Bears have not had since the Ditka era. And I think that's going to be the theme going into the preseason or to training camp, is that this is, you know, this is it. This is their best chance that they've had in the last 30 plus years to be good, to be a factor again.
They also have a chance to be fun, which is even the really good Bears teams, of the 2000s, weren't particularly fun. They were just they were fun if you love defense. Didn't necessarily have huge personalities. Caleb Williams and Roma Dunze, who we spoke to on Wednesday, they both have a little bit of charm to them. Potsy, what grabbed you just about the way that they've been handling this attention? We know that Caleb's used to it, but Roma Dunze's not necessarily been under the same spotlight that Caleb's been under the last couple of years. Shoot, nobody in college football was.
Yeah, I think the biggest impression I get is that they don't act like rookies. They've both found the right touch, I feel like, right now, based on what I've seen before. Like, they're not overdoing it or underdoing it. They're being themselves, and I think you've seen that. If they are successful, they will both be fun guys to cover, and players that the Bears fans will really like getting behind, as opposed to some others where they really haven't. So even good players. So yeah. So I think they've made a good first impression. Long way to go. Got to see what happens when things aren't so great, including losses and things like that and bad performances. But the signs are good, and you make a good point, and we've talked about it before. You can't say it enough. Is a good Bears offense is so foreign to so many of us who cover the Bears and root for the Bears that this is going to be a fun experience if they reach that point where they're fun. Mm-hmm. It's going to be even better because we're just not used to it. And it's going to be like a novelty, really. Mm-hmm. If you think back to 2013, the last time they had a really good offense, that was still a tough year.
Jay Cutler missed a very important part of it, and a lot of the offensive numbers came from Josh McCown, who, even as he was going for touchdowns, you sat there and went, well, this guy will be back on the bench in a month.
But the biggest thing that took the edge off of that was that the defense fell apart. Yeah. Lovie Smith's defense fell apart under Mel Tucker that year after they had taken strides to avoid that, and that took a lot of the steam away from that season, not only just for the day-to-day fun of it, but also in the season. I mean, they ended up not making the playoffs because they crapped out in the last two games for offensive and mostly defensive problems. So this has the potential to be better than that.
That was the year that we were downstairs outside the Bears locker room before a Monday night game against the Eagles in Philly. Maybe a Sunday night game. Regardless, it was a night game. Or it was a Sunday night game. And the Bears had just learned that one of the teams they needed to lose in front of them had lost. And we heard this roar coming from the locker room that all the Bears had to do was win one of their last two games and they'd make the playoffs. I think the Eagles went ahead and beat them. What was the score?
54-11, Pat.
Then what happened the
next? Not that I remember it or anything.
And then what happened the next week when they came home to face the Packers and all they needed to do was stop the Packers on one play? What happened, Patsy?
I don't want to talk about it.
Chris Conte screwed up a coverage.
Yeah, it was 33-28.
Was it Randall Cobb with the catch?
Yes, I believe so. It was a bad moment.
And that was the season in which maybe the second closest season in the last decade that the Bears have had to having a particularly relevant football team. So, the hope here is that things will be at the very least interesting. I want to talk to you real quick about Shane Waldron, Mark. You know, the Bears needed a coordinator with experience. They went out and found one. They found a guy who could build a staff with some pretty veteran, respected position coaches. What do we make of Waldron at this point? From a personality standpoint, I don't feel like we're learning a ton about him in our interactions. But what do you think of what do you think of kind of the stability that the Bears hope that he's brought?
Just counting on him being the guy they thought he was, a guy who was, as we've said before, he has the seal, the Bill Belichick seal of approval, the Sean McVay seal of approval, and the Seattle
Pete Carroll
seal of approval, and also has experience calling plays, and basically just knows what he's doing, you know, and which is a factor because. This is not a starting over situation. He's got a ton of talent, maybe as much as he's, well, I guess you can't say that because he was with the Rams, but as much as he's been in control of, let's put it that way, when he's been in control. And so I'll be honest, I don't really have any insights into Shane Waldron. He doesn't reveal very much. He's, you know, a nice guy. But even today, I'm just asking about, you know, the expectations and the possibility of hitting the ground running with this offense, just, you know, did not just basically said we're living in today, you know, not even going to go past June 12th. So I guess what I'm saying is he didn't really reveal much about himself or this offense or his vision. So at this point, we're just counting on him being as good as the Bears think he is, and what the record shows that he is. Like all, you know, all guys, there are many guys in the league who are really good with really good talent and mediocre with mediocre talent. I think right now he fits into that, and maybe you could even argue more so with what he did with Geno Smith. So I think there's hope that he'll be good. But I guess what I'm saying is, at this point, I really don't know.
Is there a chance that this offense isn't a work in progress throughout the whole season? I think even the most nutty of Bears fans would admit that, you know, there needs to be a little bit of runway, a little bit of grace at the beginning. But do you think by the end of it, is it possible that this thing's running like a well-oiled machine? I mean, in Houston last year, I mean, there wasn't even much of a ramp-up. They just started off being really good.
Well, yeah.
But, boy, that's the exception and not the rule.
I will say that, but and I did bring that up, the what I consider like one of the best comps ever for a Bear in all my years covering the Bears. You know, we were joking about this earlier, just like, usually you're comparing, you're saying, oh, yeah, well, the Rams with Kurt Warner did it, or the 49ers with Joe Montana did it, or Tom Brady, sixth-round draft pick. You're always comparing to some really pie-in-the-sky type of comp. The Texans are not pie-in-the-sky.
Right.
It's a very legitimate comp in every facet, like I said many times, with except the one exception of Laremy Tunsil. The Bears are actually better. And so anyway, point being, I brought that up, and Shane Waldron did make a good point. Even when the Texans were off of that hot start with C.J. Stroud, they were hot and cold at first. C.J. Stroud was okay. You know, he had his own, you know, trials and tribulations as a rookie quarterback, and Caleb Williams, I feel, will as well. So to answer your question, I think they will be a work in progress. But the question is, how much progress and at what level? And that's the thing. Work in progress is a very wide open thing for a team. And sometimes it's just an excuse for not being very good. And you can still be a work in progress and be good. And I think that's my expectation for this team. I expect them to be a work in progress all season. But I also expect them at some point, pretty early, to be also good. And that's the standard that I think this team should be held to, or needs to be held to, unless the defense turns into the Vic Fangio defense that carried Matt Nagy's offense.
That's the beauty of this is they don't need the offense to be an A-plus to win in week one or week two or week three or week four. But, you know, they needed to get there eventually, to have the staying power that all these Bears teams have yet to have. Posse, before we go, I want to ask you about Jerry West. I know how much you love / absolutely hate being thrown curveballs here, but Jerry West died today. Any lasting memories of him?
Well, yeah. I mean, my lasting memories are frankly not good as a Bulls fan. It's funny how, like, you know, in that era, more than this era, you were never a fan of, you know, like even Chicago guys like Ken Griffey Jr. and players like, and right, Mike Trout. You never liked anybody on the other team. You were never a fan. If you were, it's very parochial. If you were in Chicago, for one thing, you never saw them. So anyway, he was the enemy, and not only that, but he was the root. The Bulls had a really good team, had really good teams under Dick Motta, with Jerry Sloan and Orban Lehrer, Chet Walker, and Bob Love and Tom Boerwinkle, and they had contending teams, and Jerry West at least twice, if not three times, was in their way, including a couple of 7-game losses in the playoffs. And so my first impression, this guy was just a killer. And I'm sorry he passed away, but I'm glad, I feel good about him the same way I kind of feel good about Dick Butkus, in that as this era of great and greater athletes has emerged, Jerry West is still considered the logo. You know, right. This new athletic era did not diminish him, and he is being, and you can tell by, you can see the tributes, and everybody respects what he was. And even, you know, in another era, you would say, you know, it'd almost be like, oh yeah, well, Michael Jordan should be the logo, you know, the Michael Jordan logo. I don't think you hear that too often. I think people accept that. And Jerry West is a representative of what the league was all about and just the greatness. I'm glad of that his legacy has stood up. Just like I said, that was key for when Butkus passed away. That was one of the things about him, is that, you know, the Dick Butkus, there's still a Dick Butkus Award in three levels of football. That's a great tribute. When you consider how many great linebackers, the Lawrence Taylor, how the linebacker position is, what a great tribute to him. So I feel the same way about Jerry West. That people still, generations who never saw him play, I think still have a respect for him, because the generations who did see him play have really kind of, have not allowed him to get a guy like him who played in a different era to get caught in the shadow of the greatness of all these great players now. So, yeah, just a tremendous player, tremendous shooter, just a tremendous, he's a playmaker. He didn't play in the three-point era, but, you know, could get his shot anytime you wanted it. And as a 6'5 guard, that wasn't that all that common in his era. And so for him to be a guard who could handle the ball and shoot like that, and just he had something about him. He was like a Johnny Unitas. You know, Johnny Unitas was a quarterback who really made quarterbacking. And Jerry West made kind of the, along with Oscar Robertson, made, you know, big guards. And so he was the ultimate big guard of that era. And I'm glad I got to see him play, although I have to say it was also very painful as a Bulls fan.
I was texting with a group of people this morning listing the greatest Lakers of all time. Kareem. Jerry West, Magic, Kobe, LeBron? Is it possible?
The Lakers had too many good players who played for them. Championships without
them. Elgin Baylor was ahead of LeBron, I think.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, as a Laker, absolutely. Elgin Baylor was absolutely.
I argued James Worthy. Lakers fans might prefer James Worthy to LeBron just in terms of his Lakerness. But is it possible that LeBron...
I mean, nothing against LeBron. He's a great player, but he just hasn't been a Laker. And the one title he won was, you know, not even in front of fans, you know, basically.
Finished above seventh in their own division once in the last 12 years, the Los Angeles Lakers, which is crazy. Possible that LeBron's the second greatest player of all time and the ninth greatest Laker of all time.
Well, yeah, because he didn't play for the Lakers bulk of his career or the best part of his career, so that's like no shot at him. I mean, you know, it's just the timing, you know, the timing of it. So, I mean, Lakers have a huge. I mean,
Shaq. I mean, we haven't even mentioned Shaq.
Yeah. I mean, come on, George Mikan.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of, you know, obviously Lakers and Celtics. Anyone who grew up in the '60s and '70s like I did, they were the dominant teams.
DePaul legend George Mikan, right?
Yes. Right. Absolutely.
Look, we brought it back to local. Potsy, we are going to go on a little bit of a summer break. You going to do anything fun?
No, I'm not. I might go to Las Vegas for a little bit, see my son. My son's at a bowling tournament there. I might go there. I might do that. But other than that, I'm just going to kind of relax, get things done, and maybe try and get a head start on the season.
Let's do that.
Because I feel like this could be a really good season. Either way, it's going to be either a really good season or it's going to be something to write about one way or another, because the expectations are pretty high.
Coming off of last season, any season that wasn't last season is automatically
definitely looking forward to it, especially for us, because one way or another, it's going to be a lot to write about.
No shortage of things to write about. He's Mark Potash. I'm Patrick Finley. Thanks so much for listening. I usually say we will be back again real soon, but it probably won't be real soon. I'm not going to lie to you. It'll probably be a couple of weeks unless news happens.
Yeah, unless Caleb Williams doesn't sign his contract or something.
In the interim, go ahead and follow Mark and myself and Jason Leisure on social media. Check us out on the Sun-Times website and in print. Until next time, he's Mark. I'm Pat. Thanks so much for listening.